Hello, welcome to Virtual Newsmakers. I'm Debbie Ellickson, and I'm here with my co-host, Cynthia Seymour. And we're here with our guest, Robert Cairns. And Robert is an internet security expert. And we asked him on this show because there are some questions circulating about some of the alternate messaging apps that are out there and their safety with respect to children. In particular, there was a CBC Canadian Broadcasting Network report last week about the Kik app, and there was a reporter who went undercover as a 13-year-old girl on this app, and her profile was barely up when she started getting very disturbing messages from pedophiles all over the place. And like a 29-year-old, even knowing she was 13, asked her to be his girlfriend. So there are some very disturbing things about this Kik app. And Bob is very versatile on what's happening, and he works very close with the Toronto Police Force. And so he has a lot to say about this. Bob, why don't you tell us what you're doing lately, because we haven't had you on the show for a while, and let's get you to start talking about some of these apps.
Thanks, Debbie. Lately, I've been working on a couple of projects. I've been growing my business as I... Like Cynthia, and to you to some extent, I work in the digital marketing field as well. So I've re-upgraded some skills because the field keeps changing, and I've got a couple long-term clients. So I'm having a lot of fun and challenge with that. And I've been spending time, surprisingly, as you both know, I started a book, and due to a multitude of things that was going on, I put it down. I'm back at it again. So trying to get some writing done, and just trying to keep out there and educate some of the kids. And I hate to say it, it's almost like a PSA for drinking and driving or smoking or drugs use, that we got to keep hammering away at the kids and the parents and trying to keep educating them and to make their lives a little safer online. That's, things haven't changed, the mechanics have, and that's the big thing.
Well, you know, it's interesting because, you know, dealing with kids and teenagers, it's I have a teenager, and, you know, they think that we're trying to police them and don't understand we're trying to protect them. So, you know, what sorts of things are you seeing out there that are new that the parents need to know about, and then how do we as parents work toward helping our children understand, you know, how to protect themselves online?
And that's a good point. I think kids think they're a little bit invincible. They think they can't do anything wrong. They think nobody's going to bother them. And by the way, what we're talking about today doesn't apply just to kids. It applies to adults as well. We know many adults who are cyber-stalked online. I've been the victim of cyber-stalking. I make no bones about that. Several of my police friends have been. I won't mention names, but they know who they are. So we've all gone through it. And the mechanics, believe it or not, are as much to adults as they are to kids. Part of the problem is the landscape keeps changing. So the kids are staying miles ahead of the parents aren't educating themselves, and the parents, some are in denial, but some of them just frankly don't understand. Where we have a problem in a city like Toronto is we're a multicultural city right now, almost a United Nations type city, and there's a lot of parents who are just struggling to get through their days at work, let alone the police their kids. And
right.
What I think it stems down to is family values to start with. So the kids that are getting in trouble online are typical lacking stuff at home right now. And that's part of the problem. It stems from the home.
Well, what happens when parents are working and they're not able to be, you know, like hawks on the shoulders of their kids online?
But that's no more different than it is. I grew up in a family where two parents raised four boys. My dad was a CFO. My mom was a very successful real estate agent, still working. And how did the parents watch kids in a playground or in a mall or back then?
Well, they didn't.
They didn't. So there has to be some core values set down at home, and there has to be some trust level and some understanding at home. So there has to be communication at home between the kids and the parents to start with. I mean, because why the kids flock to the internet and get themselves into trouble, I really believe is because they're lacking something at home. So they're looking for a false sense of security or a false sense of love or a false sense of attention that they're not getting at home to start with.
Okay, so, all right, so we're getting past, this is way beyond just Googling boobs or something silly like that. This is, the reason why I say that is because that's probably what I faced with my son, and I didn't really go, I'm fairly tech savvy, and I didn't go out of my way to check the history and all that kind of stuff, because I do trust him to a certain degree.
You have to take trust, yes.
But my daughter is 7 years old, and she fully understands search, the idea of search. Mm-hmm. But she's not yet been faced with, say, multiplayer games or chat situations where you're in connection from your living room with anybody and everybody in the world. So how do you deal with, I think parents think it's just search, and what are they searching for online? They don't, I think a lot of people do not realize these are full-fledged conversations where kids are being, somebody with malintent is building a relationship with these kids, and then, for lack of a better way to describe it, cultivating these kids into very dangerous situations.
It's actually the same way, believe it or not, that kids join street gangs or get involved with the right crowd. It's the same type of psychological warfare being played, if you want to call it that. Mm. I think what you need to do as parents is you need to sit down with your kids and have a frank discussion. I have a 23-year-old son who's 24 in February. One of the things we did when he was younger was we sat down and established some parameters. And one of those parameters has to be, first of all, if you have a problem, you come talk to your parents. But the parents have to be non-judgmental. Hmm. Part of the problem is parents put down those parameters, and then when you come to them, many of them get judgmental. That's not the time. They're coming to you for help. The second thing you need to do is instill in your kids, and whether it's War of Warcraft, which is a multiplayer game, whether it's Kick, whether it's WhatsApp, whether it's BBM, whether it's Facebook Messenger, the mechanics are all the same. And instill in your kids, if you run into a problem, you need to learn, use your block, what's called your block skills, so to block the person causing the problem, and you need to go to a parent or a teacher or a counselor or somebody you feel comfortable with to kind of help you out through the problem, because that's where the breakdown happens. Because kids run to their parents, the parents get judgmental, and the kids say, why do I run to my mom and dad again?
Right, and it's interesting because the multiplayer games, I love gaming. I'm all about gaming. I love the idea of leveling up. I love the idea of strategy. There's a lot kids can learn from games. But when I've been on those games myself, I've also, as a parent, sometimes seen comments in the chat that is very almost somewhat abusive to younger kids and teenagers in a way that I think is, and it's hard those are almost self-policing. Some of them have block to them, and some people will even block kids from their group if they hear, not to kick them out of the game, but to prevent them from being exposed to some of the abuse that's going on. But then you get these applications like Line and WhatsApp and whatnot that people are using to communicate with their teams, that also is a gateway into people being in contact with the kids in a way that might not be okay.
You're exactly right. And the problem is a lot of the content that goes in the games, and my 23-year-old's a gamer. He lives in World of Warcraft. You know, I've stood over his shoulders. He doesn't live with me right now. And I'll look at him and say, did you really hear what I just thought you heard? Like, you need to police it a little bit, but you also need to educate. And part of the problem is it was even a game, and I'm trying to think of which one, and you're not going to believe this, they even had scenes of women being raped in the game.
Yeah,
it was built into the game, and I wish I remember the one. It was about a year ago. And the problem with that is that's what causes this destructive behavior. You see, the other problem is, we all watch Bugs Bunny as kids, right? And we all know, on a scale of violence, Bugs Bunny is one of the most violent cartoons on the face of the
earth. It is, yeah.
And none of us, the three of us, haven't grown up bad, or we haven't grown up bad, because we were educated the difference between reality and not.
But these games are much more realistic, and you know, cutting heads off, and blood's going everywhere, and shooting people in the face, and stuff like that. I mean, there's a high level of fiction in Bugs Bunny, because they're not human looking, and there's not blood splattering everywhere, and it's not shooting. It's kind of like in Roadrunner, the weight falling down on top of the wolf or whatever it was.
The weight on the coyote. Coyote. Yep. I agree. And the other problem is, I mean, and I'm going to use you as a good example, Cynthia. You're very photogenic, right? So, like, I hate to say it, right or wrong, that's an exact aim for a predator. Like, they latch on. I've had a couple of my friends female friends, they look amazing, but then they become targets, and people think that's a right. And the problem is, at the other end of that screen, you don't know who you're talking to. You don't know if the photos are real. You don't know if that person is really in California, not down the street from you. I mean, there's a million ways on the internet to mask information. And that's part of the issue.
I don't put myself out there in that way, though. You know, I don't,
You don't have to, though.
You don't have to.
I must get 10 trolls a day. Like, I'll be sitting here on my Chromebook or another device, and all of a sudden the Hangout thing will pop up. And, you know, 10 times a day, there's some random creep or Fisher will try to, hi, or I saw your picture, and, you know, I get that a lot, like at least 10 times a day on Google, and probably one to five times a day, I'll get friend requests in Facebook that are obviously fake profiles that are trying to do the same thing. So you don't have to try.
I get them too,
and
I'm male.
It's a female first on the internet.
I just ignore them. I don't understand what's the why.
Well, you do ignore them. No, I don't answer them. I block them. But I mean, they come up because they ignore you. Like I could be doing this Hangout, and all of a sudden one will pop up. I mean, it gets in there, or they're trying to actually send you a Hangout and stuff like that. So it interrupts your day when these trolls keep, you know, invading your space.
The problem is the kids aren't ignoring, and that's part of the issue.
There's some adults that don't either.
Yeah, I mean, and the kids don't ignore them, and the kids keep playing on it because they get talking to somebody who's paying them more attention. You know, as you take a young girl, and I hate to be stereotypical, she's 15 or 16. She doesn't get much attention at home. She wants to feel wanted. And then she's got some person on Kick or WhatsApp showering her with compliments. I mean, that's what happens, and that's how she has no clue if that guy on the other end is 15 or if he's 35.
So what is making some of these apps more vulnerable, like, than, say, Google and Facebook and the normal networks? What it makes, say, that Kick app more trolly than others? I guess one of the aspects is probably because you don't have to verify who you are on there.
That's correct.
Some of the other ones, you're supposed to be a real human being.
But verifying who you are doesn't stop anything, because all you have to do is create a fake email address, put the email address in Russia, use a proxy server, and away you go. I mean, I think what it is where the kids are going. So it used to be all the kids were on Facebook, and we know if you look at the demographics and the model, the younger kids are actually getting off Facebook, and they're going to Instagram, they're going to Pinterest, and they're going to Kick, and they're going to WhatsApp. And WhatsApp, what's changed there is WhatsApp's now available on your desktop. So that even complicates the issue even more. There's now a desktop app. So I don't think it's the app themselves. I think it's where kids are going. And typically what you're going to find is teens tend to flock away anywhere where there's not adults hanging around in big numbers.
Right, very true.
So that's, the mechanics are the same. So I don't think the app is the issue. I think it's the psychological of it, and it's how the kids or the teens or the tweens or even the young adults handle it. I think that's the issue.
And they're probably finding new apps, because every time they find an app they like, then the adults come on, their parents come on, and like, oh, we like this one, like Snapchat. So we're gonna troll you on Snapchat now.
Yeah, that's exactly. Now, what I'll also add.
They want to get away.
What I also wanted to add, Debbie, is did you notice that the day the CBC report came out about complaining about Kick was the same day that in Ontario they busted 40 people for internet child pornography?
Oh,
there was no coincidence that that story came out on that day. The point they were making was, and you had to read between the lines because they didn't say it was related, but the point you had to sort of follow through was, that's why CBC released that story. That Kick has been a problem for a year now. I mean, when we start hearing problems when I teach with youth and the police in the schools, it's Kick. The kids are all concerned about Kick. So, and part of it is the smart ones have taken the approach. They don't talk to anybody they don't know in real life. I mean, that's a big part of it.
That's good advice right there.
Yeah, if you don't know somebody. Now, we're a little...
But then Cynthia and you and I would never be talking.
That's true.
That is true, but we're also adults. We're also at a different level. And we've also voice and video verified pretty quick, right? So...
Yeah. Right. I mean, if you guys were trolls, we wouldn't have maintained a relationship, because I wouldn't have anything to do with you, because adults do have the power of having discriminating taste in terms of who they want to hang out with or not.
Yeah. I have, because of my association with Toronto Police, I get more trolls than most people. One of my best friends, and I know he shared Debbie's post, and I'm going to give him a shout-out. Here's a gentleman by the name of Scott Mills, Graffiti BMI, Scott on Twitter. Scott is considered an internet cyberbullying expert. That's one of the things he does. And Scott and I have done many presentations in schools and with groups together over the years about trying to make things safer. And Scott will tell you he gets trolled way more than most people. So sometimes it's just by association. Sometimes it's by what you do. Change your Facebook status and say you're single and watch the fun start. I mean, you know.
It's also for females, and particular high-profile female gamers. Oh my God, they're terribly bullied. I saw a program a few weeks ago about female coders and the abuse that these people take because they're female in the tech industry. You know, sometimes just being a living, breathing female makes you a target.
And I'll tell you, I've been in tech for 28 years, and some of the brightest people I've worked with are female. So I, you know, having being in that industry, I get it. And frankly, they don't get treated the same way, and that's a problem. I mean, I've worked with project leaders and managers who are female, and I have nothing but the utmost respect for them because it's about doing a job, right? So
this isn't just a problem, though, in the tech industry. This is a problem in Hollywood where none of the females are directors and 4% of the writers are female. And so that's we're only getting the male vantage point in that industry. It's also true on Wall Street. It's true in political leadership. I mean, it's true in every industry across the board.
Yep.
And it, I had a knockdown kind of with my son who couldn't understand why the female soccer team was demanding equality in pay, and he had the nerve to say that it was because they had less viewers and that they didn't work as hard and that they didn't have as much revenues coming in. Well, in fact, they've got $20 million more revenues coming in, and they've got more viewers, more championships, than the male team at all. So, you know, it's a largely cultural perception, I think.
I agree.
The more people stand up, and I think there was a lot of backlash. I think it was Microsoft had some kind of big event, and then they had, like, dancing women wearing little schoolgirl skirts and stuff like that. And, you know, I think it's about people stepping up and saying, you know what, it's this kind of behavior, you know, while it may be, it's in video games. I hate to say it.
Yeah.
In technology, that's how the nerd culture portrays women.
Yeah.
Even the superhero women wear tight clothing and mind you, so do the men.
The
men do too. So I guess it goes both ways there. But at least there seems to be a trend in the superhero culture, like with the movie side of it, that Marvel is and DC are finally starting to embrace some of the female heroes and bringing them a little more into their movies, although we still need to see a headliner. But you're right, Cynthia, and I think that also starts right from the very bottom when the younger ones go into some of these apps but it isn't just girls either that get trolled.
Yeah.
Boys do too.
There's boys getting trolled.
If they're cross-gender.
Yeah. There was a case in Toronto, I don't know if either you're familiar with, where there was a man that actually took his daughter's profile and fought and led the troller on, and then with the information was able to go to Toronto police, and they made an arrest based on what was said. And basically the father led in and basically played this guy and said, okay, big boy, if you want some, you know, let's arrange it. And it had all the innuendos, and then they took the chat logs and walked right into Toronto police, and they were actually able to make an arrest based on what this father did.
Wow.
It was in the Toronto newspaper about a couple months ago, but there's a parent who actually really cared about his daughter, and she was concerned enough, she went to dad and said, this is happening. And he was non-judgmental, so...
Right, and he took the bull by the horns and did something about it instead of sticking his head in the sand.
Yeah, but the problem is young boys get abused, and it translates from online abuse to offline abuse as much as young girls, believe it or not. There's been more and more cases. If you look at those 40 arrests that were done in Ontario a couple of weeks ago today, the CBC story broke, half of those were males looking at young boys' child pornography.
So getting back to a little bit to those instant messaging apps, I guess one of the things that makes them stand out more is because they are not necessarily attached to how would you describe it? They're not attached to like your mainframe, you know. They're kind of standalone. So there isn't really a, like, if I go on my Chromebook, if I go on Google, if I go on there's a history in my internet feed where it shows all the sites I've been on, even if I go on Facebook and whatnot. Yeah. But with some of these instant messaging apps, there is no history, so you can't really search it. So even if you're being a diligent parent, you can't really search the history of the app. Is that true?
That is true, unless you're in the app itself. And I'll go one more. There's even special software that the kids are running that says, oh, a parent comes by and they push a button and it actually masks what the app is doing. So wow. It will look like they're playing a game or they're doing, I mean, software like that's been around for years because people have used that software on PCs at work in boss mode to pump up a fake spreadsheet when they're doing something. So the kids now have apps that will mask Snapchat, that will mask Kick, that they can actually push a button and it will mask what they're doing. So even if the parent looks over the shoulder, it's not going to do them any good half the time.
Wow. So then how does a parent deal with that?
I think the parent has to have trust level with their kids. I'm not a big fan of saying, okay, you're at home, so we'll put in proxy servers and we'll do all kinds of stuff. I think that just causes mistrust and worse problems.
Right.
I really believe you sit down with your kids, you talk to them, you set right. some rules down, you have two-way communication, you have non-judgmental, and then you hope for the best. Like, and that's not saying as a parent, because the minute you start snooping, lack of trust will develop.
Oh, yeah. It's interesting that you bring that up because I was on the I traveled up to Culver Academy
yep.
to serve on their technology advisory committee a couple of years ago. And I was sitting at the table with some of the IT team and faculty, and they were saying that their biggest challenge is at 11 o'clock keeping the kids from hacking into the system or hacking past the system and being able to use the internet however they wanted to. And I laughed and I said, what's the problem? And they said, well, they're hacking through our, you know, whatever, virtual network every night and getting around it. And I laughed and I said, don't, you know, they're going to be one step ahead of you. Every time you think that you're one step ahead of them, they're tech savvy, and they're going to be one step ahead of you.
Yeah, so, they are.
You know, and so I think, you know, maybe policing them is not really perhaps the best tactic.
I would agree. I'm a big believer of educating them and then
yeah.
and working with them.
So they said, well, what would you do? And I said, I would spend more time teaching them what they could be doing positive online as opposed to what they could be doing on the online that might be negative or harmful to their lives.
Yeah.
And so if you ignite their imaginations about all they could be doing and the power and the potential of it, and in fact it's the complete opposite thing is being done at there's Phillips Andover in Massachusetts,
yeah.
and they're very progressive in terms of how they view teenagers and their online usage. In fact, the headmaster of the school, his name is John Palfrey, and he came in and started teaching a hacking class, and it was the one class that was the fastest to fill up, standing room only. Waiting list to take the class. And you know what's funny is these kids get out of school and I think the difference was is that they're taught how to solve problems.
Yes.
And those are highly desirable students coming out. They will be paid tremendous amounts of money because they can solve those problems. And so, to me, that's a fascinating approach. How do you, instead of taking the fear-based approach, how do you sort of, it's almost like reverse psychology, get work with the kids so that they are able to take something that is potentially negative and move it forward in a positive direction.
Speaking of a cultural change that needs to work in the North American school curricula, that's one of the things. It's fear-based now because we see lots of blocking of certain sites, internet sites, and when I mentioned that program about the coders, female coders I saw, the other thing that came out of that program was that less than 10% of all the schools in North America are actually teaching computer skills or coding to students. So they're not even learning the skills they need when they graduate, like you said. If those schools that are teaching coding and hacking classes, mm-hmm. those kids are going to be way ahead.
Well, it's interesting that you bring that up. I have to give a plug to the Miami-Dade Public School System because I serve on their STEM, the National Academies Foundation STEM board, and, advisory board down here in Miami. And what's fun about that is that they are building out entire programs on cybersecurity that, I mean, this is the fourth largest school district in the country, and they're really trying to get, you know, when you go to some of their events where they're showing the work that these kids are doing, they're very ahead of the game. So not all programs are, you know, sticking their heads in the sand or being fear-based about it. I think there's some fairly progressive education going on. I do think there's so much change. It's happening so quickly. It's difficult for adults to even wrap their heads around how we might work with our kids.
It sure
and
is.
That's a good point. And Bob, you can answer this one, I guess, is if the parents aren't so tech savvy, and we know the schools aren't tech savvy, how do we teach our kids to be tech savvy?
So how we do it is a couple things. We have drop-ins. What we do is we have drop-ins for the kids to come in and learn. So you do it like after school, and you'd be surprised the number of parents and kids that will come up. I've done sessions of over 50 or 60 kids at one time with parents. When the parents come with them, it's amazing because then you get both sides of the point. We have to keep, the kids have to be tech savvy. So we got to change the school curriculum a little bit to
absolutely.
Do it. So I'll give you an example. I have a friend of mine who's a teacher at a middle school in Toronto. And one of the problems they have in their school, not to do with the apps right now, is to do with YouTube. Kids are, they have a device policy that says in their school devices are off unless they're being used for educational purposes. Mm-hmm. And they've had a problem with kids taking video in the middle of classes and then mashing it up and putting it on the internet. So they've had some of that go on. And, you know, it's all related. I mean, the kids know what they're doing. The kids know more of what they're doing than they're letting on because they learn quickly. They live and breathe this stuff. I've walked into sessions where you'll find the kids, and we'll use volunteers from youth volunteers to educate the parents. The kids know more than the parents, and that's scary.
I would definitely agree with you about that, and I would even go so far as to say I've got an 18-year-old son, and I have a 7-year-old daughter, and I feel like he is closer to our generation in terms of he was born the same year Google started.
Yeah.
She was born with a mobile device in her hands. Like
that's the difference.
It's a massive difference, and a massive difference in mentality. She understands already at 7 coding through she's playing Minecraft, this Minecraft thing. And there's a tremendous amount of possibility and potential with Minecraft because it's teaching math and science and physics and coding and all these things masked as a game. So there's, you know, they think they're playing a game, they're actually learning a tremendous amount, and perhaps more so than they ever will in their classroom.
That's why I think the games, the devices, the technology, if used in a right way, can be really beneficial. It's when it gets used the wrong way. I mean, look at the three of us. You're in Miami, Debbie's in Edmonton, and I'm sitting in Toronto, and we actually have a really good relationship because of technology like this one.
Yeah.
And so we're a good example.
Right.
The problem is,
And also in a working environment, I believe that if I had a project that and we have done this, that Debbie can work with me on, or that you can work with me on, Rob, and we've all been in this situation, we've enabled each other to break past the cubicle mentality and work on projects together globally because we're able to collaborate. Now, these types of things could be extended into the classroom. I could imagine global teams of kids coming together and solving a solar energy problem, or you know, you can't even begin to wrap your head around. But the technology in the schools is so, like, 1993. I mean, it's like pathetic.
Part of the problem is they do a couple things in the schools. Having been in a number, my friend's school, which is in Brampton. They actually have iPads that they share around. So they've actually gone to that extent, which kind of helps. But the problem is most schools don't have a good internet base.
Right.
Most schools don't have teachers that are up to date on the skills to teach these kids. Because I know, and I know some teachers are going to hate me, but I know when I take training for myself, I actually like to take training with a company that implements. And the reason I do that is implementers see, because they get results, so they know. When you go to professional teaching, so even as a young adult or a young business professional or somebody like you and I, Cynthia, if you go to a professional teacher, they're professional teachers. They don't know what's working out there and what's not working out there. I mean,
that's true. It's still in theory la-la land, which is great for information, but the fact of the matter is we're living in a world where the information's at our fingertips on our phone.
Yeah.
You know, and more than the Harvard Library had in 1950, you know, so.
I just remember one of my Facebook friends, and we've become very close friends. We've never met even on a video screen, I don't believe we have, just through Facebook, and she graduated from California University a couple of years ago, not a huge college, but she was, we were talking, I was asking her a question, and anyway, she was mortified that her professors were this was only a few years ago, not even 5 years ago. Her professors were still talking about floppy disk technology. And I just, and hell, at that time, I don't think, my computer didn't even have a floppy disk. So I don't think any of her computers did. So
I don't even have a DVD drive.
It magnified the problem we have in our schools, and which, you know, this may sound like it's off topic, but really all of it's connected to our topic of the day about these messaging apps.
It is
because our parents don't know it, because they were never taught in school. The teachers don't know it. They were never taught it. So how can you teach it to kids if they don't know it? And it's just a spiraling thing until somebody puts a handle on it. But like you said, Cynthia, it starts one school at a time, maybe one classroom at a time. But by the time they catch up, you know, it's already 2050.
I want to add to that, Debbie. In 1987, I had a college professor by the name of Bill Warren, and he had a dream of being able to sit out on a beach with a laptop in 1987 and do his business. And the students, people thought he was crazy. And people actually, so much so, they called him Billy Bob. I like Bill. I have nothing but the utmost respect for him. And when you look at it, he was a bit of a visionary because I can now sit out on a beach with a Wi-Fi card and do my business. And that's the problem. When I
you don't even have to have a computer. You can do it mostly from your phone.
I do 60% of my stuff from my phone now. I mean, you know? I even use QuickBooks Online and bill from my phone. I mean, it's gotten that. But the point I'm getting at is when I started in this business 28 years ago, things were changing every 2 years. And this is where parents are having problems and staying up to date with their kids and educating and the whole messaging problem. Things are changing daily now. Mm-hmm. And the only reason I stay up to date is I spend 2 hours a day reading. And that is part of my business. And people laugh at me and say, you make time? I said, I don't have a choice anymore.
Yeah, I would agree with you there. And see, that's the whole thing with the school system. I think that it's no mystery that they're still teaching to an industrial model with an industrial mindset. And our world has so vastly and quickly changed on a daily basis that if you rob these children at an early age of their inquisitive nature and their like curiosity and their love for learning, then you know, by testing the heck out of them and whatnot, I think we're really kind of going down the wrong path. I would love to see some school or a series of schools or a school system take on the challenge of understanding that they're not the information powerhouses anymore, and that it's how we shape our kids for that curiosity and that love of learning for their lifetime. And that two-hour reading situation is, you know, who was it that said sharpening the saw? Who was that?
I think that was Elaine Lindsay last week, wasn't it?
She might have said it, but I'm thinking more it was one of those motivational speakers, not Napoleon Hill, but somebody like that.
Yeah. The big thing is what you have to turn this generation into is not, as a good friend of mine and mentor of mine, Paul Tobey, says, you have to turn people into learn-it-alls, not know-it-alls, and that's the big thing. I mean, things change so much in our business and your business, Cynthia and Debbie's, that if you don't become a learn-it-all, like I've, over the years, I've just become a sponge, like really, and you have to be. The other thing that I find really interesting is the traditional school system teaches kids to be good at everything instead of to do what they enjoy and concentrate on what they're good at. And there's a book called The Power of Focus. It's written by the same gentleman who write the Chicken Soup series. And they say in that book, if you're not good at it, get out of it. Just find somebody else to do it. Pay them. Get out of it. Get rid of it. Find a way and do what you're good at. And that's the problem with the traditional school model is we force people to do stuff they're not interested or not good at. I mean, I'm a classic example of that. So,
you know, and that... I think you're very right about that. I think that but also not only just that, but learning how to recognize. I'll give you a cuckoo little example. But I went to architecture school, and I quickly realized after I failed my drawing class that wasn't really my strength. And I could come up with ideas like a volcano. That I couldn't draw, I couldn't articulate them on a piece of paper. So I found the student to partner with that drew the best and knew how to get it all on paper, but couldn't come up with an idea to get herself out of a paper bag. So we made this incredible collaborative team, and I think that teaching kids to recognize their own strengths, but also recognize the strengths of others and how to partner with them to create really dynamic teams would be an incredible way to educate kids.
And the more kids are educated and the more they feel good in themselves, the less they would be on apps like Kik getting into trouble. I mean, I think that's, you know, to draw it back to what we're talking about, I think that's part of the problem. The kids today... There's a lot of pressures on being a young child today. I mean, you've got a young daughter. You understand that.
Yeah.
I'm glad I'm not parenting a child who's 18 or 16 now. Now I'm glad he's 23 because the pressures have changed and they're, and everything's so immediate. I mean, you know, we'll go one more from these apps is dating sites have the same problem. I mean, it's the same schmoz. Young teenagers are now flocking to dating sites because they need somebody in right away. And it's like nobody, it's part of it is we're in the instant gratification society instead of working for everything too.
Yeah. Well, and there also have to be examples of kids that are doing really exquisite things online that are, you know, pointing kids' vision toward, look at what they're doing, and look at this, and look at that, and wow, and, you know, helping kids to understand that there's two paths you can take. You can take the online technology path that leads you toward some level of your own unique greatness on this planet, or you can take that path where you become the victim of somebody else, or you put yourself out there in a way that negatively impacts your life. And I am incidentally speaking this week before the Miami-Dade, a huge crowd of Miami-Dade school students, teenagers, about that very thing. And they asked me if I needed technology to do it. And I said, no, you know what, I'm going to play a game with them. And last year I played a game where I did a choice tree, and one of the things about gaming is it's a sequence of choices that add to or detract from your strategy. And so I asked them questions like, what did you have for breakfast this morning? And if it was a donut, they go back a step. And if it's something, you know, oatmeal, they go up a step, you know. Yes. Who helped your mom this week? And who listened to a friend this week? Or who did something you're not really that proud of? And I have them choice tree out their daily experience, the choices that they've made during the course of the week. And I'm like, life is like gaming. And every game that you play is a sequence of choices. And those choices are going to lead you toward winning or lead you toward losing. And, part of, I think, this whole topic needs to be teaching kids how to win.
I agree. And part of teaching kids how to win is teaching kids how to have the right mindset.
Right.
Because we all know mindset is 50 to 75% of the battle. It's just the mechanics that take to refining, right? I mean, and I think that's important. I think it's teaching kids how to be positive, teaching kids how to be, and adults too, how to feel good about themselves, how to recognize, you know, maybe this person's a good person, but they're just not for me. It doesn't fit into my life. Things like that. Teaching people how to learn from your mistakes and treat mistakes not as failure, but as opportunity and things like that.
Yeah, yeah.
That sounds like a beautiful way to end the show.
Thank you.
Okay, so if you were to step in front of a batch of students, I'm using our end of the show question. I'm twisting it around a little bit. We usually ask if you could set one goal this week to do something, what would it be? And just kind of leave it open-ended. But this week, I think we're going to ask if you could do, you know, a series of things that would help students to develop a positive mindset toward their use of technology, what would those steps be?
Oh, wow. That's a great question. One, do something fun with them with technology. I think being negative is not a good thing. And if that means bringing in a guest speaker, bringing in somebody knowing, maybe bring in somebody with some fun robotics or something and spend some time with the kids and let them try some stuff and not be afraid of it. And if they break it, then set it back up and help them.
Yeah.
Two, as part of that, set up some mentoring for the kids. Sit around and talk to them and let them just sit there and ask questions. There's an old saying when I teach, no question's a dumb question, and I believe that. I also know when I do presentations, I let people interrupt me as I'm going. Raise a hand. Don't wait till the end because it's on their mind. And three, get them involved. So don't not, and that comes back to the robotics thing, but no matter what you're doing with technology, let the kids feel it. Let them try it. Let them not be afraid of it. And get them doing some stuff. Because if you just sit there and teach and don't do anything, it becomes like, oh, this is another recording. We've heard this before. Why bother? And fourth, last but not least, let the stronger kids mentor their peers. Because they listen to peers more than they'll often listen to you or I. So get
that's
them involved.
That's very true.
And that's what I would do as a start. So.
That's awesome. That's terrific. What a very informative show this was. I knew it was going to be that way. So thank you so much, Bob.
You're welcome. My pleasure.
Thank you. This was very fun.
Yeah.
So. It's always a pleasure and always fun to join the two of you ladies anytime. So.
Well, Debbie and I are kicking back off our weekly show of virtual newsmakers. So if you all are enjoying this or you've learned something, we'd love to know about it on virtual newsmakers. We have a YouTube channel. And I'd like to ask Rob one last question. For people who might like to get in touch with you for your services, how can you help them and what is the best way for them to reach you?
A couple of ways. I'm on Twitter, at Rob Cairns, C-A-I-R-N-S, so that's one way to get a hold of me. I have a website which is in the process of undergoing a makeover. I've got 2 weeks to launch date, so I'm in 2 weeks going to be launching a new website, but my web address is Robert B. It's in Bruce Cairns, C-A-I-R-N-S.com. Or you can email me at robert@robertbcairns.com. So any one of the three, or reach out on Facebook or yell at Debbie and Cynthia, and I'm sure they'll be glad to put you in touch. You know, we're old friends, so yeah, anyway.
Also, what is your key perfect talent, and how do you most like to serve people, and how can you help them?
Two ways. One, I do a lot of educating about safety online. That is a strong passion of mine, and it's one I like to give back to the community. So anybody in the Scarborough community in Toronto or anybody in the Toronto, I'm pretty well known for doing that. The other thing is I spend a lot of time now. I originally started out doing just strictly web design. Now I'm doing a full suite of digital marketing. So I do everything from computer security to pay-per-click ads to Infusionsoft campaigns to web design. Mm-hmm. I offer the whole
terrific
list. Yeah. So.
Excellent.
Good. I know who to refer you to now.
That's okay. My skill set is greatly changed, partially because I decided to make a change and I'm about to offer a option to do live streaming of events for event coordinators very soon.
Nice. Yeah. Well, very, very good. This was fun as always, and we appreciate your time today. From Virtual Newsmakers, we are going to be signing out, and we look forward to seeing you all again next week. Have a good day.
Bye.